UFOs? Are they aliens? Government secret projects? The imaginings of disturbed individuals? Or just outright hoaxes? We're here to find out. Welcome to Jim Harold's UFO Encounters.
Welcome to UFO Encounters. I'm Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And many people fear E.T. if E.T. exists. People say we should keep them at arm's length. We don't want anything to do with them lest we end up poorly. The idea that I think Stephen Hawking, for example, has said, if there are E.T., we want nothing to do with them. But I think we have somebody with us today who has quite a different perspective, and we're very interested in learning more about it. We're talking about author, speaker, and researcher Gerard Artson. And Gerard has been studying this well over three decades, and he's been a guest on various programs. He gives lectures around the world, and just a very interesting perspective. His second book is Here to Help, UFOs and the Space Brothers. It's been translated into Dutch, Japanese, French, also available, of course, in English. And we're so glad to have him with us today. Gerard Artson, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
What are some misconceptions that you think that people have about aliens? I mean, you call them Space Brothers, so I think that sets a stage in a certain way. But what are maybe some of the things, maybe through pop culture, maybe just through ignorance, what are some misconceptions people have about E.T.?
Yes, I personally don't call them aliens. I call them extraterrestrials, extraterrestrial visitors, space people, space brothers. And of course, I'm not the first person to call them space brothers, which is a term that was coined, I think, by George Adamski in the 1950s. And, you know, it was also picked up by other fellow contactees of that era. And I think talking about that is you know, as particularly the point that you're asking about the misconceptions. In my view, the early contactees wrote about their experiences. And this was in the midst of the Cold War, the enormously tense standoff between the West, led by the United States, and the East, under the leadership of the Soviet Union, dictatorship of the Soviet Union. And you know, the space people had been coming, had shown a special interest in the goings on our planet since especially the invention of the atom bomb and the deployment of the atom bomb and the ongoing research and tests, nuclear tests, etc. And they had been warning us even then. They had been contacting governments, it seems, to ask us to relinquish the nuclear technology, and in exchange they would give us you know, help us develop safe, clean energy without the terribly destructive capabilities of nuclear weapons. And well, their offer was declined, and because of that, the space people began to initiate individual contacts. And well, we know, I just mentioned a few, George Adamski, Truman Bethlehem, Daniel Fry, are just a few to name. There's several others. And these people, especially George Adamski, received so much attention. The people were, you know, most people were terrified because of the potential annihilation of the world through a nuclear war.
Sure.
And so the people were looking for hope. They were very interested in this message of hope, which entailed a message of brotherhood, universal brotherhood around the world, calling people to cooperate rather than go into conflict and nuclear conflict this time. And that is what bothered and concerned the authorities at the time, because of course we had the vested interests, we had the military, who generally don't have a very view far into the future. They have short-term goals, and so do governments. So they decided that it was not helpful for their particular goals, short-term goals, that these messages were coming out. So, you know, what they did was to ridicule them, to deride them, to defame them, and instill, at the very least, a sense of confusion and fear about the extraterrestrial presence. So, and that has... That is still going on now, even though, you know, a lot of people have informed themselves. But if you hear like Stephen Hawking, and there was another scientist recently who said something to the same effect, that, you know, we shouldn't try to engage with extraterrestrial intelligence, because as history shows, the greater intelligence will always subdue the less evolved intelligence.
Right.
And I think that's nonsense. It's utter nonsense, because if it's been told to the early contactees, and we can see it here on Earth, if an intelligent race develops the capacity, the capability to travel across space from one planet to another, some people even think from one solar system to another, or from one galaxy to another, doesn't that require a level of not just intelligence but also moral development, development of their ethics, that requires them to work together, you know? And that is exactly what we witness here on Earth, the opposite of that. You know, we don't have that capability because we haven't been pooling our resources yet. We haven't grown to that point yet where on a planetary scale we work together, put everything at the benefit of the race as a whole, and therefore we are still in this cosmic confinement, this cosmic isolation.
Now, back to something you said pretty early on there, and it's we kind of went over it quickly, but it is an important point. So in your view, there was actually a formal outreach attempt by, let's say, extraterrestrials to contact, I'm assuming, the governments of the world and say, we want you to relinquish your nuclear weapons, in exchange we will provide you these benefits. Can you tell us a little bit more about that outreach? Because that would be probably the biggest event in history. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, as it turned out, it was a non-event because, it was at the same time that the extraterrestrials asked our governments, I imagine the U.S. government, the British government, perhaps the French, and certainly also the Russians, to inform the world about their existence, which the governments didn't fancy doing precisely the reasons that I gave earlier. And I haven't personally studied the evidence to this effect, but others, you know, if you Google Eisenhower meeting ETs, you know, there's a fairly solid and growing body of evidence that President Eisenhower met extraterrestrial envoys on several occasions. I believe as early as 1954, and I can well imagine that secret meetings took place before that, perhaps even in the 1940s. So there's not a lot I can say about it. I mean, it's the nature of secret things. But other people who have delved into this have dug up quite some evidence already. Circumstantial, usually, of course. Again, you know, it's the nature of this phenomenon and the fact that it's been covered up from the early days, from 1947, the Roswell crash. So it's very difficult to come by information and certainly reliable information that has not been contaminated by disinformation and misinformation, deliberate misinformation. Now, that's the real trick, and that's what I try to do in my work, to sift the what's reliable, because it's been confirmed from various independent sources, from statements of people that may or may not be true, and very often if it contradicts that which has been stated or been confirmed by different independent sources, then I toss it aside. So yeah, again, I can't really say much more than what I just said, but one of my major sources, when you introduced me, you said I've been studying this subject for over 30 years, which is not quite entirely accurate. What I've been studying for over 30 years is the Ageless Wisdom teaching. Mm-hmm. And when I finally started to seriously look at the UFO subject, especially the contactee era, what I found was a direct link between the Ageless Wisdom teaching, and that's, for listeners, that's the teaching that's been given out in various stages since 1875, first through Madame Blavatsky, who founded Theosophy, later, early first half of the 20th century, by Alice Ann Bailey, and most recently by a British esotericist and futurologist, speaker and writer, Benjamin Graham. And Benjamin Graham is in constant communication with one of the Masters of Wisdom. The Masters of Wisdom are the people who have evolved, Earth people, who have evolved beyond the strictly human stage as bearing witness to the evolution of consciousness, which is what these Ageless Wisdom teachings are about. And what I found when I started looking at George Adamsy's case is that as a teenager, and I document this, the various strands of evidence that I found in my book about him, studied as a teenager with the Masters of Wisdom in Tibet. According to Benjamin Graham, the coming of the UFOs and the whole phenomenon is very closely related, intricately related to the inauguration of a new cosmic age for this planet, which will also see the return of what Benjamin Graham calls a world teacher. Mm-hmm. Who, every cosmic age on this planet, if we look back in history, has been inaugurated by a teacher. The last one that we are aware of, it was Jesus in Palestine, but others have been Krishna and Hermes and Hercules, who are now more part of mythology than history, but nevertheless. So there's this very, very strong link, and what triggered my interest was the fact that I found that George Adamsy studied with the Masters of Wisdom. And that makes it, for me, so important that when Benjamin Graham says there have been contacts in the 1950s, which is confirmed, his information confirmed by the Master of Wisdom with which he works, then for me that's a major confirmation. And I understand, for most people, for most listeners, that might be difficult to accept at face value. Mm-hmm. But there's corroboration now also from the other sources that I mentioned.
Now, I do
Eisenhower and ETs, and you get the evidence that is there.
Now, let me ask you this question. It seems like there was a change in the tenor of purported interaction between ETs and humans. You had the Adamsky contacts and contacts in the 50s, kind of almost humanoid type figures, very much like us, blonde hair, blue-eyed, those kind of things. And then you go to something like in the early 60s, 1961, Betty and Barney Hill. Quite a different story. And then kind of over the years, the narrative changes, and many of the reports that we hear are not this idea of a space brother, but almost this idea of a captor, of an adversary, the Greys and so forth. How do you account for that, and what are your thoughts on those reports?
Well, that's exactly what I mean when I when I say that from more or less the mid 1950s, governments took an active role in deliberately coloring into the negative the information coming from the early contactees, and they started planting misinformation, which I'm sure they are still doing. Even when people are coming out now who worked on secret projects, etc., I'm sure a lot of it, through them, a lot of misinformation is coming out, as well as authentic information. And that was the whole purpose, to discredit the experiences of the contactees, so that the people as a whole, the public as a whole, would be confused or scared of an extraterrestrial presence. It served to prolong the Cold War. It served to continue the weapons trade and expand the weapons trade. So if you follow the money, it's very clear who had an interest in discrediting those early stories.
Now, let me ask this.
Yes.
So do you think that, for example, and I'll just take something like the Hill case or similar type cases, do you think it's actually basically a government plant of some type? In other words, that was not ET at all, but that was some kind of almost psychological warfare guided towards Betty and Barney Hill to kind of help propagate this idea that ET is something to be afraid of. Is that your view?
Let me answer that. See, the difficulty is each case is different.
Sure.
And in general, what I can say is we know, because it has been uncovered, there are black budgets. We know that there are unacknowledged special access programs. We know who has an interest in a negative perception of the extraterrestrial presence. If you put those things together, I'm sure there are people who have had negative experiences. They may have been based on authentic experiences with people from space, but have then had their memory contaminated, perhaps through special agents, dark agents, through administering drugs or hypnosis. And, so that to the people who experienced it, it is still very much real, but they wouldn't be able to tell the fact from implanted memories or drug-induced memories, etc. So and I think that's how it has generally happened, that these stories and the narrative has changed, and it has changed rather dramatically. If you look at strictly the original reports from the contactees in the early 1950s, then you can see the first change towards the end of the 1950s, and then in the 1960s, the scary stories go all out. So it's very difficult to say what has happened precisely in each case. But I have four explanations for people who say they have been abducted.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, because of the narrative having changed under the influence of so much disinformation and misinformation, people may just be employing the common language, the language that has become most commonly used.
Sure.
And they say they've been abducted, while in fact they mean they've just been contacted. That's one explanation. Another explanation is that they had an authentic experience, and it was contaminated through special agents who work towards that purpose. Another explanation is that they have a very, because it's become so ubiquitous, this whole narrative of abductions, that, and people want to feel that kind of thing, that they, through their active imagination, they felt that they have actually experienced something like that with probes and experiments, etc. And finally, you know, there's such a strong thought form over, built up over decades, over millennia, actually, of people's dreams and people's fears. And this has become a major fear in the last six decades, that people tap into these thought forms. You know, that's where channeled information comes from. So those are all various explanations for what has become a very common experience, it seems. But in my mind, it has very little to do with the extraterrestrial visitors.
Now, in terms of contact from ET, is that something that you believe is still going on to this day in terms of individuals, that they're just as active as ever and very determined to try to assist us?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And they have continued on this path of individual contact across the world over the last seven decades, since the governments turned down their offers of help and assistance. In my book, Here to Help, I've documented such cases from around the world, not just in the United States, but in Europe and South America as well. So I've no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that that has been going on and it's still going on. But I think the major part of their work, the most important part of the work, remains invisible to us, which is to do with mopping up and neutralizing the toxins that we release in the air. You know, just general toxins, but especially the toxins from nuclear tests, nuclear power plants, etc.
Now, ET, do you feel that there's one race of ET? Are there different races of ET coming from different places, or is it pretty much a unified front?
The visitors on this planet, based on my sources, and they include George Adamski, Howard Menger, an Italian contactee from the Friendship case, Alberto Perego, I believe, no, Bruno Gibaudi, a journalist, and some others, are all from within our solar system. And I think that makes sense. Lots of people think, well, you know, we've proven, science has proven that there's no life in the solar system, on the other planets in the solar system. But that's because science is not yet able to look beyond the dense physical, the liquid physical, and the gaseous physical planes of existence. Whereas if you look at the more avant-garde scientists, Semyon Kurlian developed a technique to record photographically the energy fields emanating from living organisms. Wilhelm Reich, the Austrian doctor who escaped the Nazis and came to the United States, discovered what he called orgon, rather the all-permeating life energy underlying everything. Rupert Sheldrake, a more recent biologist from the UK, he hypothesized, but also experimentally proved the existence of morphogenetic fields. And these are all things that indicate, that points towards what science itself calls dark matter, because let's remember that science says it cannot account for 96% of the known universe, which it conveniently then calls dark matter and dark energy. But perhaps those are fields of existence of matter, and which is also what the Asia's Wisdom teachings propose, that lie beyond our range of vision. And that is where the life on the other planets takes place. There's people on every planet, forests, cities, animals, people, rivers, you name it, except they are out of our range of vision. If they want to be seen, they sort of flick a switch in their craft which will lower the vibratory rate of the atoms of the craft temporarily so that we can see them. They fall into our range of vision. And once they have established their goal, when they've done what, when the people have seen who they wanted them to see them, they go back to their original state. So, that explains for a lot. So when you ask about races, I think that is based on speculation from people who are not taking into account this particular aspect of ufology, which I think is basic to a proper understanding of the whole phenomenon. And if the Martians are a separate race and the Venusians are a separate race, then I imagine there are races coming from what we know now: Mars, Venus, Saturn, Jupiter, some from Mercury, and I think those are the main origins of the visitors at this time.
Now, do you feel that when we're talking about the Space Brothers, the extraterrestrials, that at some point they'll kind of get fed up with not being able to push through on a widespread manner and just do something so big, so large that no government can deny it? I mean, the old landing on the White House lawn, but something so obvious that no one will be able to deny it.
I write about that in my book too, and I quote several sources that say that their contacts have said, well, we would never do that. First, it would infringe human free will. Second, it would, because of all the scary stories, it would cause, and not just the scary stories, but also because it's been denied for so long, there's many people who just don't believe it, that there's extraterrestrial visitors. So if they would do that, a big landing or whatever, it would cause thousands of deaths through shock, sheer shock.
That's true.
They would never do that, and that shows their benign intentions in my perspective. On the other hand, the funny thing is, people often ask me when I give talks or interviews, yeah, but why are they so aloof? Why don't they just show themselves? I submit to you and your listeners that is what they have been doing, especially increasingly so in the last 5-10 years, spectacularly, ever more detail, ever more spectacular displays of control of space that none of our craft can perform. Whole fleets of thousands of them over Mexico or in the USA or also in other countries. If people are looking up into the skies or looking in their newspapers and disregard the tongue-in-cheek tone that things are usually reported with, the evidence is there. It's undeniable.
So what can we as the average person do? We're interested in this. We want to learn about this. Is there any way, assuming you're absolutely correct and ET is trying to help us, is there anything that we can do on our end as the average person to help them?
They don't need our help, really. That we need our help to solve our problems. Anyone who looks around the world today can see that we are in dire, dire straits. We have, the economic system, but there's more and more economic observers and analysts who say that a crash, a major crash, bigger than 2008, is around the corner, could happen any minute. The environment is bursting at its seams in terms of depletion and pollution, etc. The climate is changing under our eyes because of our neglecting the pollution, etc. There's wars and rumors of war causing enormous streams of migrants, and if it's not war, then it's economic war. I mean, not physical war, then it's economic war. So you get a wall being built along the border of Mexico and the United States. There's thousands of people trying to get from Middle East and Africa into Europe. The same thing is happening in Southeast Asia, people trying to get to Australia. So there's a social crisis, economic crisis, a financial crisis. Politicians don't know what to do anymore. So there's a political crisis as well. All our systems are crumbling, which is exactly the reason for the extraterrestrial presence and the return of the world teacher and the masters of wisdom to the everyday world. And what we can do is realize that no one is coming here to save us, not the world teacher, not the space brothers. They cannot save us. We are the only ones who can save ourselves. We have created the mess that we're in. We have to solve the problems that we've created by realizing that we are one human family. We have one planet and one planet only. Because on the dense physical plane, we cannot go to Mars or Venus to save ourselves from the Earth's systems and imploding and the natural resources being depleted. So we have to manage with this planet. So we have to pull together. We have to and according to Benjamin Graham and others, the impending crisis, economic crisis, will bring humanity to its senses, so that it will, you know, it will be so clear which way we need to choose. Are we going to continue on the old way of greed and competition, conflict and increasing chaos and eventual destruction, self-annihilation, or will we choose the other path of cooperation, of sharing, to create justice and freedom for everyone? And that is what we can do in this situation. That is what they are here to help us with, to inspire us for, and to help us move into the future with an expanded consciousness of ourselves as a human race that is responsible for this planet.
Now, if folks want to get in touch with your work, want to follow your writing, your website, and so forth, where would they go?
My website is www.bgapublications.nl. For an overview of my books or upcoming talks or interviews, etc. If they're interested in my books, these are available from every major online retailer, Amazon, all over the world, Barnes & Noble. There's other online bookshops in other parts of the world. They're available around the world.
Well, sir, we appreciate our guest today has been Gerard Artson. He is the author of the book Here to Help, UFOs and the Space Brothers. It is a different perspective than what we usually hear, but it is very fascinating, and you can judge for yourself and check out his work. We thank you so much. Thank you, Gerard, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
And thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next time, and I'm sure Gerard would agree. Keep your eye to the sky. Bye-bye.